Ryan Mr. Hadley.
Hi.
Today we have an interview with you. It is about sport and leisure and its change and continuity. We have some question and we hope you answer it. Please, could you introduce yourself and give us brief information about your childhood?
Well, my name is Hedley Butterfield. I was born in 1949, and teaching this course, Sport and Leisure and Society, it strikes me as how much the world has changed. In 1949, Britain was still recovering from the Second World War, and for example, there was still rationing of certain foods such as meat and sugar. And that didn't end until I was about 3 or 4 years old. And so, after the war, there was also, of course, a lot of bomb damage caused by the German Air Force, the Luftwaffe, and there was a housing shortage. I mean, I spent the first 7 years of my life living with my father's mother and my parents in a house that had no indoor bathroom or toilet. Well, it had no bathroom at all. So leisure as a concept was not something that really people spent a lot of time thinking about. If they were interested in sport, they used to listen to the radio or they used to go to watch a football match, a rugby match, a cricket match. There was only one TV channel and we didn't have a TV anyway. So when I grew up and when we eventually moved house and got our own house with indoor bathroom and toilet, I spent my youth basically playing in the street. We used to play football, cricket. During Wimbledon, we used to play tennis. And all the sports we had were in the street outside the house where I lived. That's what children did in those days, they played in the streets. If you think about it nowadays, for young people growing up in England or here in the UAE, there is a plethora, that means there are lots of them, sports facilities, sports clubs. You know from the case studies we've been looking at how many sports clubs, Alpha San, my club where some of the students came, and all of these facilities are fairly easily available to not just young people, but to adults as well. So when I was young and I played in the streets, I was playing mainly cricket or football. When I went to grammar school when I was 11, the two main sports I played were rugby and cricket. I continued playing rugby and cricket for the next 20-odd years. And I even played cricket and rugby when we took our first job abroad in 1980, which was in Brunei. And I still actively played then rugby and cricket for a club called the Royal Brunei Yacht Club. And I even represented Brunei, the country, in rugby, so I could claim in a sort of way to be a rugby international. Only for 2 matches, but there you go.
Okay, sir, let's talk about leisure. Like, how did you spend your free time in the past and now?
Well, in the past, as I said, when we first got off a house which we could call our own, was in 1956. I was 7 years old and I spent my time playing in the streets. Then when I went to grammar school, I got access to some facilities like rugby pitches and cricket pitches, and therefore I began to play more organised team games. I represented my house and I represented the school at both rugby and cricket. And nowadays, I have retired from rugby, which is a very physical sport, so obviously at the age of 66, I don't play that. I no longer play cricket, but I am still active. I go to the club every day, and I either play squash or I go into the sauna to try and stay reasonably fit and in shape. I don't like to go straight home from college without having done something. When I came here in 1992, for the first year I was here, I was living on my own because my wife was completing a one-year contract in England. And I joined the club and started to play squash, and one or two people saw me play and suggested that I represent the club in the Abu Dhabi Squash League. So I was actually playing as the number one player in a team of five in Division 4. And because I was the number one player in the team, I felt as if I had to be fitter and better than the other players in the team. So I started a habit then of playing every day. And I continued that habit for the next 20-odd years. It's only in the last year or two that I have not tried to play squash every day. So now some days I simply find it easier to go in the sauna, because I have more and more trouble getting onto the squash court now because of my back. And when I do play squash, I have a couple of people I play regularly every week. But before I play them, I have to have ice treatment on my back. When my wife is here, that's quite easy. I simply lie on the bed and she puts ice packs on my back and then massages me. And that enables me to get through an hour on the squash court. When she's not here, I have to put the ice packs on my back, which is easy. But massaging my back is not very easy by myself. So it's a bit more of a struggle when she's not here. But I like to think that I'm still active. As I say, I don't like to go straight home from work, simply sit down, switch on the television and have something to eat. I feel as if I've got to... I enjoy having a beer in the evening. When I finish work and when I've played squash or whatever I've done. But I like to think that I've earned it. I think if you sit around doing nothing, and I think you can turn into what is known in the West as a couch potato. You simply turn on the television, you sit there eating and drinking all night, and weekends all day. And the result of that is you get out of shape. I said to my wife 40-odd years ago, that I was determined that when I got middle-aged and old-aged, I was not going to get out of shape. So I check my weight every morning. I get on the scales every morning. I monitor my weight. I check to see if it's gone up or down, and I like to try and work out why. And I'm quite Catholic in my tastes. With regard to food, I can eat almost anything. I can eat meat, I can eat vegetarian dishes if I'm in India. My favorite kind of food is seafood. And this is, you know, what I do like, however, is healthy food. I mean, you take something like fish and potatoes. If you boil the potatoes and grill the fish, you've got a very healthy meal. If you deep fry them and serve it up as fish and chips, it's nice occasionally to do that. But if you do it every day, it's like eating Big Macs every day. You'll just put on a lot of weight. When I was younger, I never worried about how much what I ate, because I burned so much energy off. When you're a teenager, I mean, when I was at university, I used to eat three times a day. And a lot of the food we ate was fried. It wasn't particularly healthy. But you have a big appetite when you're a teenager and when you're a younger person. But you burn it off. You know, you can burn it off a lot easier. When you get older, you have to be a little bit more careful about what you're eating. So one of the big differences between now and when I was young is that I not only take exercise. You know, when you're young, you take exercise just for enjoyment. You never think about it. But when you get older, you take exercise because you're trying to stay healthy. And I think taking exercise and also looking closely at your diet, at what you eat, and not so much what you eat, but how the food is prepared is a big issue, I think, in my opinion. So I am fairly careful in my diet, and you know, there are things I used to eat when I was young that I just don't eat anymore. I mean, one day we went to the airport in Brunei, and I used to have apple pie and ice cream there as a dessert. One day my wife said, "Are you going to have this, the usual dessert?" And I said, "I don't fancy it." And since then, which was about 1983, I've never eaten a dessert, an ice cream, any chocolate, anything with sugar. And so I'm lucky that way, that I don't have an urge to eat unhealthy food. So it helps me stay. I wouldn't say I was in shape, but I'm not badly out of shape.
So now, in your free time, you spend it like you didn't go to home and you do some exercise?
Well, it depends what time of the year it is. I mean, when I was young, when I was at grammar school, like when I was 11 or 12, when you get home after school, school used to be till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so I wouldn't get home. I'd go and get on the bus and go home. I might not get home till 5 o'clock. By that time, it's dark, and it's often snowing or raining, and you can't play outside. And I remember long winter evenings where what I used to do, and I used to love it, we had a coal fire, and I used to sit beside the coal fire and I used to read books. I loved adventure stories. I read just about every Biggles book. Biggles was an airman, a pilot, and there was a series of books about him. Biggles Flies East, Biggles Flies North, Biggles Flies South, Biggles Flies West, Biggles in Borneo, Biggles in, you know, there were about 100 of them. I think I read them all. So when I was young and when I was a teenager, reading was a passion. You've got to remember in those days that it wasn't until I was well into my teens before we got a television. So most of my leisure time when I was at home for like in the winter time, my time was spent listening to the radio, reading, and I used to love the evenings when my mother and father would talk about, you know, they would get talking about movies they'd seen or operas they'd seen, and what they knew about different movie stars, sports stars, and sometimes I was allowed to stay up late and just listen to them talking. And those were the simple little pleasures. That life was a lot simpler in those days, but I have very good memories of it.
Another question is that how was the support of sport in the past and now, and how was the media affected on this?
Well, as I've said, I mean, sport was not the big business in the 1950s when I was growing up that it is now. I mean, basically, if you wanted to watch a top-flight football match, say I'd wanted to go and see Newcastle United football team. They were a good team in the 1950s. Unfortunately, they haven't been a good team since then. About 50 or 60 years of being a rather second-rate team.
Yeah.
It's a long time since they won anything. But if I wanted to go and see Newcastle, I would have had to get on a bus and go across the River Tyne over the Tyne Bridge and buy a ticket and stand and watch. In those days, you stood to watch. They weren't the all-seater stadiums that you see nowadays. If you wanted to watch a football match in the 1950s, that's how you went to see it. You had to go as a spectator. If you wanted to watch football on a television in 1955, you had two choices. You could watch the FA Cup final live, or you could watch the Amateur Cup final live. One was just before the other, about 2 weeks before the other. They were both from Wembley. They were both live on television. I used to watch them with my grandparents, my mother's parents, because they had a television and we didn't. And now, of course, sport is, it's all pervasive. You know, there are, I have a Sky TV subscription back in England, just as I have a cable TV subscription here in Abu Dhabi. And every day you can put on sports channels and you can see something live somewhere in the world. almost every minute of the day. And so that is one thing that's completely changed. The other thing that's changed, of course, is that, as I say, in where I grew up in the 50s, the country was still recovering from the Second World War. And if I wanted to play tennis, I would have to go along to a local park and see if there was a court available and try and get on the court, assuming I had a tennis racket, you know. And so the difference between then and now, I live in a small town in Norfolk in England. There are only 7,000 people there. But if I want to go swimming, there are two or three swimming facilities within 5 minutes' drive. If I want to play tennis or squash, it's about a 9-kilometer drive to a neighboring town. And there's a beautiful tennis court there, with a tennis club there with 10 grass courts, several all-weather courts, two squash courts. There, quite simply, nowadays, there are more facilities than there were when I was young. I never played squash until I was 15. I couldn't have told you whether there was a squash court in the town where I grew up. In the town where I grew up, at the time, there were about 120,000 people. So it wasn't a massive town, but it wasn't small. But I couldn't have told you if there was a tennis club or a squash court. The facilities just weren't there. And if you want to take your own country, there's another example. I mean, if you think of what you could do on a Friday when I came here in 1992, whether it was sport or leisure, and I suppose shopping for some people is a leisure activity. I mean, some shopping is essential, food shopping, of course, but a lot of shopping we do is a leisure activity. If you wanted to go shopping in 1992 in Abu Dhabi on a Friday, you had to wait until evening and then go along to the souk, which was, I think, on Khalifa Street, or go to the Hamdan Centre. And not all of the shops would necessarily open on a Friday evening. Nowadays, on a Friday, you can go shopping in any one of the malls. But in 1992, Abu Dhabi Mall was not there. It was the Admar building. The Marina Mall was not there. The Khalidiyah Mall, none of the malls was there. And, you know, Friday was a bit of a dead day. When I was a boy in England, Sunday was the equivalent. It was a bit of a dead day. A lot of children were not encouraged to play in the streets. They were encouraged to go to church or to visit their relatives. And remember, in those days, most people grew up in families where grandparents and aunts and uncles lived in the same town or fairly close to one another. Now, you look at the pattern of my life now. I mean, I have a house in England. I have a job in Abu Dhabi. And I spend more time in Abu Dhabi than I do in England. We have two daughters. One of them lives in England, so we see her quite often when we go home. The other one lives in America. So just take a small family like mine, my wife, myself, our two daughters, our four grandchildren. We're spread out between Abu Dhabi, England, and America. So in that sense, there's another way in which the world has changed. And insofar as travel is a leisure activity, that's another big difference. I mean, one of the reasons I decided to go to Brunei at the end of 79 is that I had only flown on an aeroplane once in my life, from the Channel Islands to Southampton in the south of England. That's about 30 minutes. Not on a jet plane, on a propeller-driven aeroplane. I'd never been in a jet aeroplane when we flew out of Heathrow for Singapore and then Brunei. And since then, over the last 35 years as an expatriate teacher, I have visited, the last time I counted up was about 35 different countries. And so there's another big difference in people's lifestyles. I mean, not everybody has traveled, been to the countries I've been to in order to work, but a hell of a lot of people have been to Abu Dhabi, Dubai, I've even had students give me presentations about Malaysia, Brunei, Hong Kong. And these are places where I've worked. And so that's another massive, massive difference in lifestyle. And I've often said this before in class. If I had asked the students I had at Albertine Air Base or Suihan in 92, 93, 94, which countries they had visited, I don't think I would have gone further than Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Oman. Whereas now, in our class, we have 20-odd students. And if we added up all the different countries you've all been to for 22 students, we'd be have well over 100 countries, I'm sure. Well, maybe not over 100 countries, but we would have most of the students in the class which would be able to name 4, 5, 6 countries outside of the Gulf region that they had visited. I'm sure that's the case.
Okay, what are the famous sports in the past and now, in your opinion?
Did something change?
Well, the big sport around the world is definitely soccer, and I think that was the case in the 1950s when I was growing up. If anything, soccer has just become a world game, more and more of a world game with the development of the World Cup. There was a World Cup when I was young, but it didn't really dominate the way the modern World Cup dominates. Everybody in every country in the world, everybody's got access to a TV set, will watch the World Cup over a period of a month. Whereas, I never knew anything about the 1950 World Cup. I was only 1 year old, so that's quite understandable. But even when I was five, I wasn't really... The first World Cup I seem to remember was 1958. I think the World Cup was held in Sweden, and I think that was the first World Cup Pelé played in. And then the World Cup became bigger and bigger and bigger. Similarly, the same has been the case with the Olympics, which has got massive now. The Olympics in London in 1948, the year before I was born, was very much... An amateur event, and that's probably one of the biggest things that's happened, is that sports which used to be amateur are now quite openly professional. Athletics is one. It used to be the Amateur Athletic Association in Britain, but now all our top athletes are paid. Same with all the athletes around the world. And a game I was brought up with, rugby union, didn't become professional until about 20 years ago. When I played rugby, I paid money to my rugby club, whichever club I belonged to, for the privilege of playing. I never played rugby for money. Partly because I wasn't good enough, but partly because it was an amateur sport, and if you were paid money, then you couldn't. Officially, no rugby player was paid money until about 20 years ago. And so the professionalisation of sport is one of the big things that's happened during my lifetime. Every sport you see on the television now, the sports people are being paid money. And of course, the link with television is the important thing. Where does the money come from for the World Cup and for the Olympic Games and for the English Premiership? Football, the money comes from one of the main sources of revenue is the money that comes from TV rights. Companies like Sky paying a massive amount of money. And here in Abu Dhabi now, most of the sports channels, the beIN sports channels, they come in from studios in Doha. So where the money is they are the people who buy the TV rights.
About the money, how much money you were spending for your leisure time, and are there a big difference comparing with today?
Well, there is a big difference because, as I say, when I went abroad in the end of 1979, I had never been in a jet aeroplane. I had travelled abroad, but only to France, Holland, Belgium, the Channel Islands, And they are all countries fairly close to Britain. So one of the big things that's happened in my life, by being an expatriate teacher, I've been able to visit lots of different countries. Because I've been an expatriate for so long, I haven't paid English tax, income tax. So more of the money I've earned, I've been able to keep. And therefore, yes, I would spend a lot more on travel, hotels, and the like, than I did when I was young, for sure. And I think the same's true of most people around the world, in developed countries anyway. I mean, you've got the development of things like package holidays. I mean, try to find someone in Britain who hasn't had a holiday, say, in Spain or France, and you'd find practically nobody.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you wear happier or happier in the bus or not?
Well, as I say, I have fond memories of being in my grandmother's house on winter evenings by the fire, reading, watching my parents and my aunts and uncles and grandparents playing cards and being a family. We had no indoor toilet, we had no bathroom, but I can remember I had a family to surround me and support me, and I was very lucky because my parents saw education as being vitally important. And my mother made sure that I could read and write before I went to school at the age of 5. And that gave me a big advantage when I got to school. It meant that I did well from the age of 5 onwards. And in my day, when you got to the age of 11, you sat what was called the 11 plus exam. And if you succeeded, you could go to the top level of school, which was a grammar school. If you were just not as good as that, you would go to the technical school. And if you weren't, you just went to what was known as a secondary modern school. So there were three, it was a three-tier system in the area where I lived. And I was lucky because I passed the 11 plus and I went to a grammar school. And so in that sense, I had a happy childhood. Of course, when you become a teenager, when you change from being a child into an adult, they are difficult times for everybody. And I remember some good times and some not so good times. Of course, we're not in this room now, are we? We should be in a different classroom. In which case, we better get going. Have you got enough?
I think yes.
We'll see if anybody turns up, and if they don't turn up, I'll be able to continue with you. All right?
Thank you.
Even if they